First off, Kelly, we have to talk about the camel in the room. Not the elephant. Not the elephant, but the camel in the room.
She told me to get my head out of my and throw strikes.
We are going to plant the seeds to a tree that we'll never see the shade of.
The number one team in the country is not supposed to be dropping games.
Take me through what happened against Campbell. It's Softball Speakeasy Episode 11, presented by the Softball Sanctuary. And if you're new here or new-ish here, the Softball Sanctuary is for pitchers or parents of pitchers or people who throw overhand, because it is a completely holistic approach to increasing velo, increasing command in softball pitching. It's arm care central. They have programming. They have plyo balls. They have everything you could imagine to increase your velo, increase your command, but also keep you healthy. And full transparency, Kelly and I did not get into this for sponsorships at all, but this is one program and business that we believe in wholeheartedly. And if you're interested in any of that, you can use code SPEAKEASY for 10% off all of their training programs and products at thesoftballsanctuary.com. Again, code SPEAKEASY for 10% off at thesoftballsanctuary.com. But without further ado, if you're new here, my name is Reen Wilson, and I'm a former Duke softball player turned analyst and broadcaster.
And my name is Kelly Torres, current catcher on the Duke softball team.
Softball Speakeasy is a podcast that will be giving you a behind-the-scenes look at Duke's 2024 campaign. We'll be following storylines throughout the college softball season, and we'll aim to give you next-level access at what it takes to play softball at the Division I level. And boy, Kelly Torres, do we have a lot to talk about.
We do. Big weekend.
First of all, Kelly, we have to talk about the camel in the room. Not the elephant, but the camel in the room. Last week, we had Lindsey Garcia, who's a Clemson outfielder, on the show. And we just talked about Clemson. We didn't even talk about y'all's midweek game against Campbell. We should have talked about it, because Campbell came into town, came to Duke Softball Stadium, and after being ranked number one for the first time in program history, Campbell came in and they beat you guys. So I want to just dig into that game and get your overall thoughts in the game right away. So take me through what happened against Campbell.
Well, we were ranked one going into that weekend, and I don't know if that had something to play with it. Clemson's ahead. I felt like we kind of went into the weekend looking towards Clemson. Like you kind of said, it, the camels, we didn't wake up on Wednesday, and we shouldn't have, because Campbell's always scrappy. They're always mm-hmm. coming out to fight, and they were excited to be on national TV. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we matched that level of energy. And that day, we just didn't come out like Duke softball would usually come out.
Yeah, and they played well. I was on the call for that game. And I mean, they were at the regional last year with you guys. And like, that's mm-hmm. something we talked about on the broadcast, is like that team could very well come back to Durham if you all end up hosting, which, I mean, barring a complete meltdown from here until the end of the season, you all will likely host a regional. And so knowing that they could very well come back, like, what was the feeling in the locker room after the game?
I mean, we were all upset. The number one team in the country is not supposed to be dropping games mm-hmm. like that. And it kind of, you know, hurt us. Obviously, rankings do not matter. It's nice to know, but it does not matter. Mm-hmm. And we kind of are like carrying that with us. Okay, we don't want that to happen again. What are we going to do to change our approach, to change our attitude? And how are we going to compete moving forward?
Obviously, the Campbell game was a punch in the mouth, but you yeah. all had actually just come back from playing on Tuesday at ECU. And like, you all played really well. You won that game. But I think even Coach Young had said, hey, we made mistakes in that game. And a lot of times with the best teams in the country, you can make a handful of mistakes and you're just talented enough to where it doesn't bite you. Whereas Campbell, you made the mistakes, they took advantage, and you just couldn't get the bats going. So can you kind of describe to folks out there listening and watching what it's like to go from one game to the next and try to prepare and try to treat every game like it's one singular game, but also with the perspective that, hey, we have 56 games in the regular season. So it's hard to do that day by day.
Basically, what a week looks like is usually a midweek on Wednesday. You travel Thursday or Friday and then play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So this past week, we played Monday was off. Then we go into ECU. Some people were able to get some extra hitting in. I can't on Tuesdays. I am booked up. So after my three classes, I go straight to the bus and we're playing ECU. like you said, ECU, we won, but it wasn't the prettiest win. Comes Campbell. We don't want to put excuses out there. Obviously, we should be able to go out, compete against Campbell and win. And I think just it's tired. End of the semester is coming up.
Yeah.
Finals. And it's difficult because everyone's doing that and you have to play through it.
Right.
But I think that people forget that there's things outside of softball that might be contributing to this. And mm-hmm. so after that loss, that regroup, that come together, you know, let's get over this hump. We come out and we kind of make a statement against mm-hmm. Clemson.
And what a statement it was. So can you describe, if at all, what the change in the mindset was heading into Clemson? Like heading into Wednesday against Campbell, obviously you know what this weekend ahead will bring at Clemson in a tough environment. But then you leave that Campbell game, you've lost. Does the mindset change at all, or does the fieriness of the preparation change at all on Thursday before that first game on Friday?
I think we get excited to play in an environment mm-hmm. like that. So against Campbell, there weren't really people in the stands. We weren't really feeding off that energy. In Clemson, my gosh, I've never seen a stadium pack up that fast. 2 hours before the game, people are running, like straight sprinting to get their seats in the mm-hmm. left center. And it's crazy. It's awesome, the fan base in Clemson. But other than that, I felt this weekend that we had more of a like patch the torch type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
One person gets their job done, pass it. One person might have not get their job done, but it was a hard at bat. We wanted to be hard outs and we executed.
And another thing too that I think bodes well in your favor heading throughout the season and just speaks to like the elite team that you all are is you can play out of position, if you will. And I put up air quotes with that. Lily Walker mm-hmm. hadn't started a game all year and like probably I think it was less than 5 starts in her career. First off, you and I know Lily personally. What an incredible teammate, human being, hard worker. For folks who don't know her story, she came into college. She had torn her ACL playing basketball, I believe. Worked her yeah. butt off behind the scenes for years to get back to where she is now or get to where she is now. Hard work, dedication, belief in herself, stayed the course. And I mean, is one of the best stories I've ever heard of in college softball. And so she starts that first game and sets the tone. Because not only was it surprise to Clemson because she hadn't started that game, but it was probably, I imagine for you guys, a little bit of surprise too. But even further, Kelly Torres, you led off the team, which you hadn't done your whole career. So take me through what that was like to lead off and also just speak on the fact that you all can play in any position, anytime, anywhere, any place.
Well, I want to hit on the Lily mm-hmm. starting part of that question first. Put Lily against anyone, I put my money on Lily. She mm-hmm. is a dog. I've never seen someone just so strong-minded and strong-willed. She was like, okay, I got the start. Let's go. Like, mm-hmm. hell yeah, give me the ball. And when someone has a confidence like that, the defense really doesn't question it. You mm-hmm. know, you're just like, let's go. Nothing's new here. Might be new for you guys, but we see Lily day in and day out at practice and in the weight room and the work she does. It came to no surprise that Lily dominated.
Mm-hmm.
And then leading off, first off, I loved it. I usually was around 5, 4, 5, 6 hole area mm-hmm. before I moved to 1. And let's be honest, you know, I'm not built like those 4, 5, 6 hitters.
Yes, you are.
And nothing is wrong. Nothing against that.
Yeah.
But I think I came in with like a leadoff mentality, which I mm-hmm. haven't had, you know, ever. And it was be annoying, be a little menace, you know, be someone that's going to get on and cause chaos on the bases and do small ball. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have Claire Davidson and Amina Vega and Anna Gold back to back to back after me. I have zero pressure because
mm-hmm.
if I get out, I know one of them aren't getting out and they're going to be a tough out. And if I do get on, well, dang, you know, I'm probably going to score. So it was really fun to be up there. And I also love seeing a C on the top of the lineup because catchers are usually not up there.
So yeah, you all played really well. You in that leadoff role, Lily starting that first game really set the tone for the rest of the weekend. And it was a gritty series. Like they definitely had opportunities here and there, but overall you guys were the very best team and you called it in our interview with Lindsay. You said, hey, we're going to take all three. You guys took all three, but I want to go back a little bit. So of course, you lose to Campbell. And at the time, Twitter or X was like, oh, wow, like ranked number one. Now they lose to Campbell. Talking. And then all of a sudden, everyone in the top 10, barring a couple, lost. So Oklahoma lost to BYU. Oklahoma State lost the series to Iowa State. Texas was the only team in the top five that was completely unblemished. Tennessee run ruled by Mississippi State. Stanford lost to Oregon State. LSU lost a series to Auburn. Florida lost a series to Missouri. Georgia lost a series to Kentucky. Texas A&M lost the game to Bama. They're going to play here in a couple hours as this is being filmed on Monday night. So a ton of parity. And it's a good weekend to lose against Campbell because there's a lot of other names to call out as having lost to unranked teams. So I want to ask you, Kelly, why do you think there is so much parity in the college softball game these days?
Softball's growing. And softball's growing in development. Softball's growing in video analytics, like everywhere. So not only are we finding out, like, Softball Sanctuary has something that you can get and get your arm healthier and stronger and faster and a quicker pace. So things like that are just out in the world. And I think it's not just the top programs that are using it anymore.
Right.
Also film. There's film on everyone, you know. Although Oklahoma may be the best, or, you know, who's to say that now, but one of the historically best teams, they have film on them. Mm-hmm. And people can figure out sequences, figure out, okay, maybe I sit on this pitch because this pitch is what's hit harder versus her outside pitch, and learning from past teams who have played them.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who aren't as in-depth into the game, a lot of the analytics, like, you can look, players can look, analysts can look and see a heat map of where pitchers throw, on what count they throw, what type of pitch they throw. They see the video that corresponds. Like if you pull up Jayla Wright's heat map, you're going to see a lot of red in the bottom part of the zone and even out of the zone, the drop ball changeup combination. So point being, the teams that Kelly is facing and the teams that face Duke, like, that's another thing, is like, now with that number one next to y'all's name, teams are going to take that extra time to prepare, to study, to watch film, and be that much more prepared playing you. And all the data is on the table. There's a lot of reasons for the parity, but I think you're spot on. It's got to be the data, the analytics, and just the style of the game. We'll move on to our favorite segment, Softballers Anonymous. We haven't done this one in a while, but we are getting back into it. And if you want to submit your Softballers Anonymous, you can head to our link tree, which is in our Instagram bio or our X bio, Facebook bio. You'll click on that link tree. You'll see Softballers Anonymous tab. Click on that and submit your wildest softball stories. Kelly's going to take this one and read it. So Kelly, go for it.
A tale of two stories. During a high school game, our pitcher was having trouble throwing a strike. She was missing up on everything. After the second straight fourth pitch walk, I jump off my bucket and head out to have a talk. As I jump up, my catcher also pops up and waves me off, heading out to the mound. After a few moments, my catcher heads back and we are ready to go. My pitcher throws 9 straight strikes in 3 Ks. I approach my catcher and ask, "What did you say?" She responded, "I told her we were all here for her and to take a deep breath and to take one pitch at a time." That sounded good, but did not sit right with me. I went over to my pitcher, who had entered the other gate of our dugout, and asked what the catcher said. Her response was, "She told me to get my head out of my ass and throw ass strikes." That sounded about right to me. The catcher in the story is Rain Wilson, and the pitcher was Peyton St. George. Great times, dash, Coach Mac.
Thanks, Coach Mac. That's so good. No, it's so funny. When I was reading this, I was like, I don't remember this at all. It's very on brand. So I asked Peyton about it. She was like, "Oh yeah, I remember that, like, completely." But I do believe that I would have said something like that at the time. Peyton and I also have a good enough relationship where that wasn't mean or anything. But thank you so much for submitting that, Softballers Anonymous, Coach Mac. And I'm sure Kelly has done the same thing a few times with her pitchers. I want to ask you, can you think of a pitcher growing up or even in college where you had to kind of be hard-nosed like that, where you had to kind of, like, get them into gear, like, bad cop kind of way?
Yeah. I think in our current staff, you can be like that to Jayla. Mm. Jayla takes that that's how she kind of operates. Mm. I think Lily, you can be very blunt, straightforward. And then Cass, you're just like, spin the out of it, bro. Like, go up there and just throw it, you know? So it's funny how all these different pitchers take stuff differently. But I think in our staff right now, Jayla is definitely just like, let's effing go. Like, that's right, awesome. Here, right now, get it on.
That's something that you have to build as a young catcher. Young catchers out there, if you're listening, don't go up to your pitchers and say these things unless you have that trust and bond with them beforehand. That's what precedes all of this. And there's also, to like kind of shed some light on that circumstance with me and Peyton, I don't even know if Peyton remembers this, but she came up to me, and I was always like that with her. I was always like, I really was super hard on her, like really hard on her when she was a sophomore in high school and junior in high school, because she was just so good. And every now and then she would miss over the middle. And like, that happens, right? Like there's no pitchers trying to miss over the middle. It just happens sometimes. And I was always really hard on her, and she always really responded well, until it was like one game. And she texted me after, and we haven't talked about it since then, but she texted me after, and she was like, "Hey, I think this isn't working anymore. Like, oh, I think you're being too hard on me." And I was like so upset. Oh my God. I cried. Cause I hurt her. You know what I mean? And like, and also it was, I'm so glad she said that to me too, because she was always like, she was so tough in the circle and handled feedback so well, and was just a dog, especially in high school. I mean, even in college, of course, as well. I just didn't catch her as much, but she had the guts to tell me, "Hey," like, and I know at the time I was a difficult person to tell that to, for sure. And so for her to tell me, "Hey, that was, you were too much. This is not working." I was devastated, but I also was like, I'm so glad she told me that this is not working the way it is. And that's something that I encourage all young players to communicate with. If like, if the hammer doesn't work, you need to tell your teammates that the hammer doesn't work, right? Like if you need an arm around the shoulder, you need to communicate that. It's that battery relationship is critical, man. It's very critical.
It is. Great teams, great units, great batteries all need to communicate. Every single pitch, every at bat. So, and it doesn't come to my surprise you said that, Ryan. I would see you saying those exact words.
Yeah. I remember Kelly, I was hurt. I don't know where we were, but I got on your butt a couple times when you were a freshman.
But you know where it comes from.
I hope.
You do, because you're not the type of person who's going to be not following the rules, not giving their 100%, not, you know, and then yell at me. You're doing all the things that you're preaching. So you make yourself a very respectable leader.
That's good. I do know that like everything in life has two sides of the coin. Like you can't wear your heart on your sleeve and not have the negative sides of that come out. And I've dealt with that in my career. I don't know if you have, of like showing your emotion. And you handle it really well. There's moments when like you get on the umpire or something that I'm sure when you look back, you're like, I probably shouldn't have done that. But that's something that if you're a young athlete and you recognize that you are emotional, like I was emotional, baby. Like, but if you're someone like Caroline Jacobson or Lily Walker, that just so calm, cool, collected, stays even, shows emotion when like the moment's exciting, but doesn't have that opposite side of the coin. That's a good spot to be, but also understand who you are and try to wrangle in that side of you as much as you can. I know it's hard. I'm sure for you, Kelly, it's hard when umpires get on your nerves.
Oh, I am very vocal. I also create a relationship with the umpires. Mm-hmm. It's my fourth year now, and I know pretty much most of the ACC umpires.
Yeah.
So you can joke around, but they know how I play. They know I'm a competitive. So if there's a call I don't agree with, I'm going to let them know and tell them, you know, I think it's there. And I think the other team might be getting it and we're not. So what can I do? Or just be better.
Absolutely. And I think that like that goes back to like it's all preceded by a respect level with the umpire. You shake an umpire's hand every time you go out there. And that's how it should be. It should be respect. Respect should precede every hard conversation you have with a teammate or an umpire. As long as there's trust there that, hey, I love you, I'm trying to get the best out of you, then you can not say whatever you want, but you know, you can have those hard conversations. But we'll move on to some listener questions. And these were submitted by emailing us at softballspeakeasy@gmail.com. Please email us any listener questions you might have. We're going to tackle a few here today, but softballspeakeasy@gmail.com. And this one comes from a dad. I'm the dad of an 11-year-old player. She is having a tough time transitioning to an older division of play, and I'm looking for anything to help her break through. So I suggest that she tries playing a game without eye black. I've noticed that our local D1 team doesn't use it, so it is not much of a thing past juniors. Superstitions are very much a thing, I believe. We enjoy your show and look forward to watching Kelly absolutely rake in OKC next month. Thanks.
Oh, that's sweet. I think if it takes what it takes, if the eye black, you know, playing without it is going to let you play freely and that's just a thing, you know, in your head that makes sense, do it. For me, it's something very small that you might see in my at-bats, but if I don't get a hit using one bat, I switch to my other bat. Mm-hmm. And you can see in my first game, the last game, I used two different bats, and obviously it's not really doing anything, but in my mind it's like, okay, new bat means I'm gonna get a hit.
Dad, I think you're doing a great job because she's 11, you know, and I think making the adjustments in that way, like eye black or bow or what helmet or whatever, those are way better than like revamping her swing or trying to like whatever. But I also think for her, like the tough time transitioning, that will pass. Like, and the way you improve is by playing better teams and playing up, playing older girls. So don't sweat it too much unless she's really sweating it and she comes to you and says, hey, I want to fix my swing or this, that, and the other. Then you can kind of like feed that fire. But Dad, I think you're doing a great job. And I agree with Kelly, like those small adjustments, like whether it's the bat, whether it's batting gloves, whether it's eye black, those start there before you start doing anything else. But and we love those questions, by the way, because we love helping young girls. And I mean, I wish when I was her age, I had like a little podcast to write into and see what they think, right? We're not, you know, all knowing, but you know, we can give our 2 cents or 10 cents.
She's also 11.
Yeah.
So she's going to mature into her body and into the game and just keep feeding her the love for the game and everything will pan out.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. Our next question, and I want to preface this question with, for folks who may not know Kelly or I or haven't listened from the beginning to now, Kelly and I were teammates for Team 4 of Duke. Now Duke is at Team 7. So, and Team 4 also was the only team thus far to win an ACC championship, the tournament championship. So the question states, and this is another one we got from our email, what non-obvious accomplishments did Team 4 achieve to win the conference championship? What were the little things? What were the lucky things that fell into place? And how did the team grow over the season? Were there individuals whom you want to shout out as having made significant leaps to win the trophy?
Let me start with the end of that question because there's a lot that we can unpack there. But a big part of Team 4's success was so many people were veterans and they were there for Team 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, they grew as a group. And not only did they grow as softball players, but they matured. They were young when they came in. Now they were seniors. And now they had us, the freshman class, who came in. I don't want to say talented because we weren't talented. It was just like we're finally working as a team, you know, like you guys finally were just putting the pieces together and you were getting it. And it was cool to listen to your guys' stories as a freshman and hear what you guys went through from 1, 2, and 3 to where you were at 4 and where you envisioned the program to go and to still be a part of it and to see it now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And to your point, Kelly, there's a ton to unpack there, but I would say like the non-obvious accomplishments. So I think there's a few things. So Team 3 actually was phenomenal. We were 23-4 heading into a weekend against Florida State when COVID hit. And so we had that momentum and most everybody came back to Team 4, but we also had the perspective of losing all of it. And so for Team 4, to your point, Kelly, there was a ton of veterans on that team, juniors and seniors who'd been on Team 1 and didn't have as much success early on, which we knew, like the whole thing early on. And to quote a former teammate, we are going to plant the seeds to a tree that we'll never see the shade of. And we started to see some shade Team 3 in that third year. And then in Team 4, we basked in it. We basked in the glory of getting to that point through hard work, but we also remembered the hard times like it was right here, because the standard hasn't changed. Like Coach Young has had that high standard since day one. And so the program has grown. So I think that's part of it is like COVID was right in the rearview mirror. We had that perspective to grab onto. But also, this is just a personal opinion on why I think that year was so successful too. But we got COVID tested every single day and our COVID restrictions were so intense such that I cannot remember anyone ever getting sick. We had very little distractions. We just softball. Friends with like hung out with each other, school, mm-hmm. and that's it. Like
well,
there was
school
no
was online.
Else. School was online,
much
and,
easier,
and so it was different. That made it that may have had a you know effect on it too. But yeah. The team grew throughout the season. We've touched on this a little bit, but there was definitely roadblocks and adversity and mm-hmm. things that happened throughout that year. But also too like. There's always luck. When you win a championship, there's always some luck involved, right? There's always like that moment or couple that you pull out a rally. Like with the championship game against Clemson, we did not hit a ball for a single out of the infield. And we won that game 1-0. Like Valerie Cagle was unbelievable in that game, but we found a way to win, right? And so I think all that kind of together, and we also beat Florida State. We came back to win that game. So a lot happened, but man, that was special. That was like one of my favorite moments of all time in softball, but a lot of things point to and people to, you know, give props to on that team, but great year. I got the ring actually. Yeah. Rings right back here, right there.
I still wear it sometimes. Remind myself what's in the future, you know?
Exactly. And I wonder if you've shared that. Obviously it's not ACC tournament time. But mm-mm. I wonder if you've shared that with your team about what it takes to win a championship, ACC championship. I know y'all have bigger aspirations. And for folks who don't follow college sports as much, like, yeah, the ACC championship is a huge deal. It means a ton. But for you all and for us, like, that really wasn't the goal. Like, yeah, that's part of it. That's one of the goals. But the goal is to make it to Oklahoma City. And so can you speak to that a little bit?
I also think Team 4 wanted to be in the history books. We wanted to be like you guys were like, we're out. After this year, we're out. How are we going to make our names, you know, be a foundation in this program? And he did. We were the first team to win that ACC championship title. And I think that same vibe is here with Team 7 because we want to be the mm-hmm. first Duke softball team to get the regular season ACC championship title and the tournament title. Mm-hmm. So I think it's that we have it and it's unbelievable the things that we have proved to ourselves. And now that the world and the softball world is just realizing what Duke softball is capable of, I think we're just, you know, being fed confidence and we're finally letting out this swag that we've just always had. So I think Team 7's looking a lot like Team 4.
Mm-hmm. And just adds up to you all, a lot of the alumni are coming back for the ACC tournament. We were getting some t-shirts made. Yes. Right. I just checked the pass. I think there's like 17, 18 of us coming back for the game. Oh, wow. So very excited to watch you guys ball out in Durham. ACC tournament in Durham. If you want tickets, go grab them because
yes.
Yeah, everyone get out there. Let's
go
let's,
watch us play.
Go watch. And we Kelly and I, maybe we'll do there's no way we could do this. Maybe we'll do a podcast live with some fans. No, probably not. But
yeah, with like an audience, that would be so fun.
Yeah, let us comment below. I mean, I know we're small but mighty softball speakeasiers, but let us know if you're coming to the ACC tournament, and maybe we can plan something and get the crew together, for. Before or after the ACC tournament, we'll figure it out. We'll just let us know if you're coming to the ACC tournament. We'll figure it out. But that is all the listener questions we have for this week. Thank you all so much for watching, listening, viewing, and subscribing. Please, if you're feeling kind, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a nice little review. Only if you got time. That means the world to us. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel. And as a reminder, we're part of the Softball America Podcast Network. So subscribe to them as well. Wealth of information there on that channel too. And we're so grateful to be part of the Softball America family. But until next week, we wish Kelly luck this weekend against University of Virginia for senior weekend, which we'll talk about next week and we'll cry together. Kelly's senior day. We probably will cry next week, actually. So stay tuned for that. Thank you all so much for watching, listening, and subscribing. And we will see you next week. Peace.